This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Wanda Jackson has been called the Queen of Rockabilly, but let's face it, there weren't a lot of women rockers who could have been in line for the crown. Jackson toured with Elvis Presley in the mid-50s, and it was the King himself who encouraged her to try to cross over from country to rock and roll. Her biggest rock and roll hit was a song that Elvis recorded first, Let's Have a Party. It was her only record to make it to the top 40. But she also had records on the country music chart, such as In the Middle of a Heartache and Right or Wrong. Now at the age of 65, Jackson has a new CD called Heart Trouble that features her singing with younger performers, including Elvis Costello, Dave Alvin, and Rosie Flores. She does some of the songs she's always performed, as well as more contemporary material. Before we hear music from Heart Trouble, let's go back to her 1958 recording, Let's Have a Party. That's Wanda Jackson's 1958 recording of Let's Have a Party. Wanda Jackson, welcome to Fresh Air. You've been called the Queen of Rockabilly. How did you start performing rockabilly music? I mean, you started off doing country music. How did you make the transition to rockabilly?
Well, you're right. I started in country music. And then in 1955, after I'd graduated from high school, the first touring that I did was with a young fellow early in his career, too, and it was Elvis Presley. And I worked with Elvis off and on for a couple of years, and I could see that this new style of music that he was doing, that, you know, I loved it, and I was with him right as he was really breaking big, you know. And he's the one that encouraged me to try. He said, I think you could sing this kind of music. And being just country, you know, I said, I don't think I could ever get the feel like you do. He said, sure you can. So he encouraged me. He took me to his home and played records, and then he'd sing for me and saying, if you kind of do it this way. And so, you know, I had a good teacher.
So one of the things Elvis was famous for, in addition to his singing style, was how he looked on stage. You know, he was very sexy, and he was very sexually suggestive on stage, particularly for the period. Did you pick up on that aspect as well? Did you change what you wore? Did you change what you did on stage?
Well, I had already changed my stage attire. You know, I didn't want to be in full skirts and cowboy boots and cowboy hat.
Why did you want to change the look?
I don't look good in those things. That was the main thing. I've never been able to wear a full skirt, haven't to this day. And the cowboy hats and those old clubby boots, you know, I just didn't like it. I didn't feel like that was me. Because I was a big fan of Marilyn Monroe and Elizabeth Taylor, and I wanted to look like them, you know. I used to go to all the musicals and with paper and pen, and when I'd see a dress I liked, I'd sketch it down real, you know, real fast. And so we've copied one dress off of Betty Grable and one off of Marilyn, and it's kind of funny when I look back at the old pictures and say, oh, I remember where I found that type of dress. What? But my mother was a professional seamstress, and she did all of my costumes for me.
Now, what was it like for you to watch Elvis become this just phenomenon?
Well, it was exciting. I was excited for him. And, of course, like I said, I was 17 and 18 years old, so I was a fan of his as well as a friend, and I was thrilled to death at his success. He was very concerned and disturbed all the time about the things being said to him about his gyrations and things like that, and it really upset him, it hurt him, He was a very sensitive guy, I think. Somewhere along there, about 56, he was getting so popular, they had to stop him from autographing or meeting with his fans, you know. And that really hurt him because he loved his fans and wanted to shake their hands or what have you. But, you know, they were already pulling his coat off and tie and things when I was working with him. And it just got worse. And they said, someone's going to get hurt if we don't stop you from this autographing. So I remember that.
Let's hear a song that you wrote that was a country hit for you. It's called Right or Wrong. And this was recorded in 1960. Did you think of this as more of a country song than a rockabilly?
Yes, I did. I wrote the song, and it was definitely, it really wasn't country, but in the 60s, country music was beginning to use the violin sections and singing groups behind us, you know, and so I was really just in the trend of what people like Patsy Cline and were doing, and Brenda Lee and things. So that song was one of the first that lent itself to that type of an arrangement.
Well, let's hear it. This is Wanda Jackson, recorded in 1960, Right or Wrong.
Right or wrong, I'll be with you.
Right or wrong, I'll be with you.
I'll do what you ask me to. For right or wrong, right or wrong, it's gotta be.
Wanda Jackson recorded in 1960 her song Right or Wrong. Now, you said before that you weren't really comfortable performing rock and roll to teenagers or rockabilly to teenagers because you were used to performing for adults and you just didn't relate to these teenagers. Did that affect your staying in country music as opposed to trying to cross over more into that teen rock and roll audience?
Yeah, probably so, Terry. If Right or Wrong, you know, right after Let's Have a Party, Right or Wrong became a hit. It was a crossover song, too, meaning it was high on the charts in country, but it was also in the rock and roll or the, I think then they called it pop and soul music. So it was in the charts. And that's when I tried to do these teenage things and just, you know, didn't really care for it at all. So, yeah, I've considered myself country really all through my career until we get to about 1985 and I was invited to Sweden to record a rockabilly album. And it was from that point on that I realized how popular I was with the new rockabilly fans, not only in Europe, all over Europe and Scandinavia, but also in America eventually.
So you found this more specialized audience who cared a lot about your records.
Mm-hmm. And that's what made it so exciting to see these young adults into this 50s rock music. Mm-hmm. And I've just been having the greatest time working with bands that they sound just like our bands used to, and they're really into the lifestyle, and they drive the classic cars, and it's and they dress in vintage clothes.
Now, I want to play something from your new CD, which is called Wanda Jackson, Heart Trouble, and features several guest stars, including Elvis Costello, Dave Alvin, The Cramps. Let's hear a song called Funnel of Love, which also features The Cramps. Do you want to talk about this song and why it's on the CD?
Well, it was on the back of Right or Wrong, and so I didn't think it got much airplay, you know. But a couple of years ago, these new rockabilly fans started requesting Funnel of Love, and I couldn't imagine, so I had to go back and relearn it, and that's why I put it on this album. I thought I'd like for them to have a newer, kind of fresher version. I'm singing it the same, but the music is a little more up-to-date, and well, I wanted to do it.
Well, I'm glad you relearned it. I like the record. This is Funnel of Love from Wanda Jackson's new CD, Heart Trouble.
As I go deep into the funnel of love, I tried and I tried to run and hide, even tried to run away. You just can't run from the funnel of love. It's bound to get you someday.
There are several guest artists on the new CD, Dave Alvin, Elvis Costello, The Cramps. Did you know their work when before meeting them for the CD? Mm-hmm. I figure they knew yours, but did you know theirs?
No, not so much, really. I didn't. I'd heard of Elvis Costello, mm-hmm. and I'm sure I'd heard, you know, some of his recordings. But when I met him there in the studio, I brought him my number one box set, the Bear Family Records out of Germany. Mm-hmm. Has put out two box sets on me, and everything that I recorded from 54 to about 73, it's all in there. So I took Elvis the number one box set, and when I said, I'd like for you to have this, he took one look and he said, oh, I already have that one. And I have the number two box set too. So I think when an artist goes out and pays their money to buy, especially the box sets, I figured he must really be a fan. I had been told that he was. And we just had no problem singing together. I'd given him a choice of two or three different duets that I thought might be good, and he chose the one that I really liked the best, Crying Time. And even though our voices blended nicely, I thought, and we sang in the right keys where I could harmonize and then he could harmonize, and it was just a real nice experience.
I want to ask you about something else in your life that I'm sure was a very pivotal experience, a turning point. In 1971, you were born again.
Uh-huh. Right.
If it's not too personal, what happened to you then that was behind such a life-changing experience?
Life-changing, right. Well, I had come to the point in my life where I was realizing that I had everything I'd ever dreamed of wanting. I had a wonderful career, a wonderful husband, two beautiful, healthy children, homes and cars, and, you know, everything that I wanted, and yet I just wasn't happy. And my husband and I, we knew that our marriage was kind of getting in trouble. Our children were being reared by grandmas and governesses, and we knew that some changes needed to be made, but I was fearful of making changes, and I think he probably was too, because our whole lives were wrapped around my career and our traveling. And I was in this frame of mind and all, and my husband too, when we went to church. It was a church that I'd been a member of since I was a little girl, but church had never been important to me personally, you know, at that point. So the congregation began to sing, "Pass Me Not, O Gentle Savior," at the end of the preacher's message. I just realized that God was saying to my heart, "Wanda, walk with me." And I could just understand it all of a sudden in my spirit, that that's what was missing in my life. That's what was wrong. And I turned to my husband and I said, "Honey, there's something I've got to do." And he knew what I meant, and he said, "Me too." So in our churches, we go forward publicly and pray and receive Christ. And so that's what we did. We took each other's hands and went down the aisle, and we gave our hearts and lives fully and once and for all to Jesus Christ.
So you've been singing a lot of spirituals since you were born again?
Yes, I've written some and sang a lot of them. Mm-hmm.
You're speaking to us now from Oklahoma City, which is where you were born, but your parents moved when you were a girl to Bakersfield, California. Do you still have family in Oklahoma City? Is that where you live now?
Yes, I've made it my home, all except for the about 4 years that my folks lived in California. I was a little girl.
I see.
And so I met my husband here, and his folks were here. And with our traveling after we had children, it didn't make sense for us to move to Nashville or Hollywood or something, because with us gone so much, we wanted both sets of parents to be able to drop in and make sure our kids were being taken care of properly. So that was the main reason that we didn't move.
Now, what did your father do for a living when you were growing up?
He was a barber for a while, and he drove a cab. And that he was driving a cab when he quit that to travel with me.
Because you were underage when you started performing. You weren't 18 yet, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. What was it like being tutored by Elvis and how to play this kind of like sexy, rebellious music when you're traveling with your father?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I thought of it like that. But my dad really liked Elvis. He was a big cut-up, and Elvis was too. And so they kept something going all the time, laughing and various things. And so it worked fine. Now, my dad went along to help me with driving and things like that. But he also, it was very important that my reputation stay intact. And I'm sure that was probably the main reason that he traveled with me. So I wasn't able to ever go from city to city in the car with Elvis, or I had to, you know, Dad had to drive me. I had to be in my car. And, you know, he didn't allow me to sit on someone's lap, and I couldn't lay my head on someone's shoulder if I was sleepy and they were riding with us, you know, and he was pretty strict in those things. But it did keep my reputation intact.
And there you are singing about like broken hearts and let's have a party and riot in cell block number 9.
Yeah.
With a dad making
strange.
Sure that your head isn't on anybody's shoulder. I love that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's quite a contrast, isn't it?
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and I've enjoyed all of your questions.
And I, you know, congratulations on your new CD.
Thank you so much.
Wanda Jackson's new CD is called Heart Trouble. Here she is with Elvis Costello. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Oh, it's crying time again. You're gonna need me. I can see that far away look in your eyes. I can tell by the way you hold me, darling, that it won't be long before it's crying time.
Now they say that absence makes the heart grow fonder, and that tears are only rain to make love grow.